Podcasting 2.0 for November 27th, 2020, episode number 13, and we've got fire in the hole.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
What's on fire?
The hole is on fire. You know, it's like, I figured somehow I'd want to tease that we have a fiery guest or something like that. I don't know. Usually I come up with the episode titles after the show. I like to, you know, stretch my brain a little bit, try and do them beforehand. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the man who beat the Rona while riding the Lightning, Day, Fully Noted Jones.
Nice. This is unlucky. This is an unlucky episode.
Why? Why is it unlucky?
It's episode 13.
Oh, no. It's going to be super lucky for us. My machine's going to keep working. It's not going to crap out. Mm-hmm. Which was yesterday morning. I had to do the No Agenda show, and my Surface Pro 6, which I like very much, has been. It only does the studio stuff. It kept going into some reboot loop, but a really ugly one where it decides to show some, like, a little text at the bottom of the screen and in kind of like a magnified fuzzy font. You know that's bad.
It's the Windows way.
You know when that happens, you know you're at low-level Windows shit right there. Like, oh, God, the old DOS is talking to me. Anyway, so...
The Windows way is to tell you that there's lots of things wrong, but then not actually do anything to fix it. So You have to go in there yourself and manually run check disk.
Yes.
Even though that would be super easy for Windows to run itself.
What a concept. I mean...
Yeah. Linux says, something wrong with the file system, I'll run FSCK. But Windows is like, hey, there's something wrong with the file system. Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, well, and I really appreciate it. And hopefully it was... I think, you know what I think it is? I think that internal drive, I filled it all the way up with an audio recording by mistake, selected the wrong the wrong drive. And you know what happens when your drive runs out of space? That's fun. Your machine starts, windows start floating. It's like the weirdest things. Maybe that made some bad sectors. Is that possible?
It's you're in the land of the unknown once you run out of space.
Why am I even asking?
You have no idea.
Why am I even asking? Reminder, if you're listening to us on the Sphinx chat app, crank up those value sliders, please, you stingy bitches. Crank it up.
It goes all the way to 100.
It goes to 100. And now, what is Bitcoin now? Oh, we dip below 17,000. So, you need to peg that stuff for the value you're getting.
Yeah, I bought 3 or 4 Bitcoins yesterday just to make sure. just buying the dip.
Oh, man. I've been hell deep in... I set up a Lightning node for Podcast Index. And I want, which is on voltage.io, which is fantastic. You know, you literally can only set it up and then you can just get your credentials and you have to manage everything remotely, which is the way it should be.
The macaroons.
Yeah, the macaroons, exactly. So there's this, and I upgraded my own node to, Raspi Blitz 1.6.1, which is another harrowing experience where you literally have to burn an SD card. Yeah, you burn the SD card, you take the old one out, you put the new one in, and then magically everything reappears, but it doesn't reappear right away. There's this hour and a half install process, which luckily you can monitor. You know, they give you a little instruction like, oh, tail minus N, 1000 minus F, and here's your log file. So, you can watch it. So that finally all worked. So that gave me ThunderHub. I'm getting to a point here. ThunderHub is this reporting software, which I've promised Eric, our back office, our partner in back office. I promised him to start running reports, because it's really in the fees, in the 1% split that we've received from the podcasts on the index node, it's maybe $15 or something. It's quite low, but it's going at one Satoshi a minute. So it's still incredible. And
that qualifies as stacking.
That's totally stacking. So I run the report, and I can run it on my own node fine, but every single time, and I'm just trying to run November receive payments, and it won't do it. And so I hop on with Graham from Voltage, and I guess he knows the ThunderHub guys, so now we're like telephone chain down the line. Yeah. He says, you know, do you know how many transactions you have? So yeah, I can get that number. Let me see. I said 9,800. The ThunderHub guys went, oh, you broke our software. We have to completely retool. There's no way we can. We have to do something different with timeouts and under the hood. There has to be a whole new upgrade just to handle the amount of transactions we have.
The amount of software that you break, you are breaking on a weekly basis is incredible.
I'm just like a bull in a china shop, man.
You're like the QA guy's wet dream. I mean, you break stuff you don't even. I mean, like you're breaking stuff two levels down the chain.
Yeah, I know.
This is great.
Well, I love it. I didn't break it by myself. You know, the concept. I mean, this proves that what we're doing is truly on the cutting edge. Because you know, I guess no one ever expected anybody to have, you know, almost 10,000 transactions in a month. That would be crazy. But when you think about
what's going to get really great is when we break all of Lightning all at the same time.
And I'm a little concerned. I have to be honest.
I am too.
I'm reading about some limitations here and there. So anyway,
I'm a little worried about that.
It'll be a dynamite ride for sure. We'll see where it ends. This is Podcasting 2.0, meeting of the board. As I said earlier, for November 27th. You had a good Thanksgiving, Dave?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had some dinner and chilled out. It was good.
Any extended family or just your own family?
We went to my parents' house for for a little while and ate with masked up and all that stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, you were masked up indoors?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right. They're probably in a risk group, I guess.
Yeah, my dad's in his 70s, and so we're trying to be careful for everybody involved. And
yeah,
you know, because I had it, and it's clearly touched me. So I'm just trying to keep everybody safe.
Yes, indeed, and you survived. So nice.
I did. I'm glad. I came out stronger than before.
I could not imagine how many forms we'd have to fill out. It'd be so annoying.
I did not come out stronger than before, by the way. I'm currently drinking tea to stem the cough.
Yeah,
the
I know. It takes a while. The full recuperation is not just 2 weeks. It can last a bit. It can linger.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Before we get to our guest today, do we have any open things we need to discuss? Other than maybe I would like to start off. How about that? And yes, thank you and Comic Strip Blogger and Drunk Plato and anyone else who helped create the apps page, which is starting to look really good. And we have a URL for that, newpodcastapps.com. You know, spread that around because you look at this page, you're like, holy crap, there's a lot going on with this podcasting 2.0. It looks really nice.
It's full.
It's full. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's very exciting. And, you know, pretty soon we're going to have to add podcasts that are completely compliant. And we'll have to have a badge. We need a sticker.
We want the badge.
We need a badge that people can put on their podcast sites. Podcasting 2.0.
I've heard it referred to as a pill, like a pill badge or something like that. I mean, well, we need one of those things.
Whatever it does, it has to link back to us. that's true. Do you remember the top five of the internet? It was like, you're in the top five of the internet. And then people would get, you know, get these, it was like top 100 or something, but you could get a top 10 or a top five. And this is back just as the web is coming out. We're still using Mosaic browsers, no Netscape. And everyone was so, you know, it was kind of like, oh, we're officially one of the top 100 websites. Reebok, my client. I'm like, okay. I guess like we want it on our site. We want to display that. It was just some dude who had just set up some website and he gave everyone this code and everyone was in the top 100 essentially. And it all, you know, looped back to his website.
It's the top 40 under 40.
Yes.
Or whatever that thing is called. It's like, yeah, pay me to be in this book.
One of the top 40. Well, anyway, I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
What else? You've been close. Here's what I think you've been doing. I know you've been coding stuff. I know you've been rewriting things and probably making things more efficient. That's under the hood. And then on the surface, you've probably done some more cleaning up of namespace stuff, if I'm guessing right.
Yeah, I'm continuing to bounce between three different repos, essentially. So we're the main podcast index stuff, just adding features and I'm doing some aggregator stuff mm-hmm. and then some new feature stuff. I keep kind of ping ponging back and forth between that because the aggregator, needs constant care. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of doing that stuff all the time. That's always sort of background radiation. And then adding some features, with the new tags and such. And then I'll bounce over to, the namespace repo and try to clean that up. And I also had a meeting, and we can talk about this a little bit later. I had a meeting, a phone meeting with the guys from Podchaser mm-hmm. about the person tag and how to try to get some momentum on that.
Oh, nice. This week.
Yeah. And then,
now you're going to be interviewed for this, I think.
No.
I thought you were doing an interview soon.
Oh no. Well, that's going to be on, Frederick Bjorman's, show. He's the guy that made, the podcast, the Chapters app for Mac.
Ah,
so that's something different. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. We're going to have a chit chat,
mm-hmm.
but, then also just working on the website, on the apps page and stuff. I've been doing that a little bit. So I'm just kind of bouncing around all over. It's a little schizophrenic at times. I feel like I need to take that medicine where you hear the voices or whatever, but
I don't think you really want to be taking that medicine.
No, I don't want to. No, it's a complete joke.
I don't think so.
But I've, it's just bouncing, a lot of bouncing. I never feel like I'm actually, getting very far on any one thing, but then I look back and I'm like, oh, well, okay. Made some progress.
Yeah. I've been successfully publishing with the new tags. Haven't gotten a lot of uptake on the community chapters. I only asked for it once, like a week ago on No Agenda. And I did have some people drop by, and I guess they took the effort to get the Hypercatcher app and then set a couple of chapter markers, but nothing so far on the one from yesterday. So we'll have to see. That's why I need the badge, man. I need it to say podcasting 2.0 compliant, certified.
If there's no badge, you don't know.
Yes, there's no badge. Like, you know what to do.
That's just a crappy 1.0 podcast. So I can't do anything with that.
Now, you also did some work on a really cool search.
Yeah. Yeah. The really cool, I made what I thought was a really cool search, and then James Cridlin told me all about the ways that it sucked.
The Australian Pete in your cornflakes? What's up with that?
He did. No, he had a good point. So I made a person search, or people search, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And, but he made a good point. He said, well, you know, until we get the person tag finalized and get a lot of person tags out there, this might work, but this also may delay the adoption of the tag. So, mm-hmm. I think he's right. And it gives people a reason, if you're doing these searches already, it gives people a reason to not feel like they have to do it. Well, that works, but he's right. And so I think, I'm going to leave it there for now, and it works. But then once the person tag, and officially launches or finalized.
I'm still raising my hand, hoping I can turn that from person to credits, but I don't think I'm going to get anywhere.
I don't know. Maybe we can ask.
Or is that a separate tag?
Oh Lord, I hope not. God, I don't. It's this one's been hard enough. I don't. Oh, it's not a separate tag.
I was talking to Roy from Breeze. From the Breeze wallet, mm-hmm. and he wanted to know if there was an endpoint, which I'm pretty sure there isn't, but if one could be created, that outputs feeds that returns IDs, I guess, podcast IDs of feeds that have the value block.
Like only the feeds
only the feeds that have the value block.
Oh, yeah, that's easy. I mean, that's 15 minutes of work.
Which then led me to think, wouldn't that perhaps be a way to showcase the namespace on the apps page if we had, if we could surface podcasts, maybe even next to each piece of functionality? What I'm getting at is I'd love to see some other podcasts who do chapters, who do transcripts, who have clips, just to fool around and see what it's like, and maybe I get some ideas.
The same thing, essentially the same thing as the apps page, but just for feeds.
Bingo. That's it.
here are the feeds that support locked transcript.
Hell, you know what we'll call it? We'll call it the Podcasting 2.0 Certified page.
Certified.
Yes.
Certified. I like that.
Okay.
A badge. We get a web badge.
Yeah, baby. You're certified and you can get your badge right there.
Yes. I like it.
Maybe some code so anybody can copy the badge.
Print your own certificate so you can stick it on your wall.
It's almost like Archer Daniel Midland's prize. No, wait. What is that? What is the guy who always do the cars?
Cars.
Yeah, they always give the
like, oh yeah, the J.D. Power.
The J.D. Power Award.
Yeah.
Which is like the biggest. It's like you can buy that, I think. Like,
yeah, straight up.
I'll take a J.D. Power Award.
Top secret. You can buy ours too. if you want to get Podcasting 2.0 certified, but not actually do anything.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll take your money.
We'll take your sats. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, someone who I think is pretty much completely Podcasting 2.0 certified, Austin resident, and I'm pretty sure he calls himself the CEO of Fireside, Mr. 5x5, Dan Benjamin.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, Dan. How you doing, man?
Doing really good. You know, it's a little rainy here in Austin, but I can't complain about it. I'm actually coming to you live and direct from my garage instead of my little studio today.
Fantastic.
Well, that's all you. That's all you.
Well, yeah,
it's your processing. It's the amazing, you know, post stuff you do in post to make me sound better.
I don't do crap in post. There's no post ever. I refuse.
Dan, we call this the board meeting because this is the only time we talk.
Well, thank you for allowing me to sit in. I appreciate that.
Yes. Well, I'm wondering what you are. I mean, are you like the corporate lawyer or the consultant? Like,
No.
The consultant.
Couldn't be further from it.
My dad says that a consultant is somebody that you hand your watch to so they can tell you what time it is.
I would say Dan is an assessor at the board meeting. You know, were you like assessor? That. Yes, you assess what's going on.
Now, Dan, I did want to chime in, Adam, about the person tag.
Mm-hmm.
Or credits tag, as you prefer. The one hesitation I've heard from people about it is that although it's optional, you include and you should include the email fee, part of that tag. And there are a lot of people who had said, "Well, I don't want my email address showing up in there because it's in a public feed, which of course is scrapable, which means your email address is now exposed in a horrible way." But whose isn't? But I think that's the one thing about it. So
really?
when I implemented the tag, I implemented it and just left the email field blank.
Uh-huh.
But that seems counterproductive. Like it should be in there. So maybe, you know, do we have to have an opt-in or opt-out?
That's very interesting. So I hadn't even thought about the email part of it. And as far as I know, it's only been kind of discussed as a way to search more accurately.
Well, it's a much better way to search via email address than via a name.
Good point.
You know, but so I think it needs to be there, but I don't know if that means we encourage people to use an alternate email or.
Well, see, now this is Dave, pay attention. Cause here it comes.
I'm sorry, I'm distracted.
The surefire way to identify someone is put their name and their node ID, their public key. That's what you need. And then you can call it a credit. You know what? I don't care. Call it people. As long as that's the identifier. Everybody is identified by a node.
That is the person tag. Is that doesn't have an email listed in it though.
Well, Dan says so.
It did on your, on your GitHub page, yeah. I implemented it.
There you go.
Oh,
Kerschlag. Okay.
It has a URL and it has an email in there. If I'm remembering correctly,
I don't see that. You're in the realm now, Dan, of unfinalized tags here.
Yeah, I know.
So you're,
I'm living on right on the edge. I'm surfing on the edge of your code base right now.
Yeah, that's always it's dangerous to use my finalized code. So you're way out on the edge here.
Well, thanks for the warning now. I'm trying to keep up with you guys. I implemented everything in 1.0 and I've implemented some of this stuff in the first phase and the second phase. I'm trying to keep up with what y'all are doing, but
You know. Sorry for the breakneck speed on that kind of stuff.
But. No, I love it. It keeps me on my toes a little bit. And like the chapters with the separate JSON file, that was fun. I like that you're using all these good standards out there. It makes me happy and it's easy to implement. So far, the stuff that you've done has been like really cool and really, really good to implement. So, you know, thank you.
When you're deciding what to implement on that kind of thing, I feel like, you know, it's really, here's the way I see the landscape. And you can tell me what you think about this, is that there's, you know, you have these mega large hosting companies who they're just, you know, a lot of that's they're on autopilot most of the time. And then, you know, you have smaller, hungry hosting companies like Fireside that are trying to, you know, all of these sorts of things that can innovate and move podcasting forward. I mean, for a company the size of Fireside, it seems like that's just a way to innovate and differentiate yourself and help your customers. Whereas somebody like a Libsyn or something like that, or an Anchor that's humongous, they probably don't feel the same, you know, need to innovate at a rate like a Fireside does. Is that fair to say?
I mean, the part about Fireside is definitely true. The thing for me is we're very much trying all the time. You know, the important thing, just to add to what you said, is it, for us anyway, it's not always to be first in coming out with something, although that's kind of cool. Like being able to say, hey, we're the first to implement something. That's cool. But so many of the tags that you guys are creating and so much of what I love about what you guys have built is that it's focused on the community. It's focused on the podcasting community. And that's what I really care about because, like, you know, I started podcasting in 2006 and I went full time in 2008. And so like, this is a community I really truly care about. And so anything that I do in Fireside, it's always my first thought is, how is this moving things forward in a positive way? How are we doing something? And or what are we, when we implement a feature, I want it to be because that feature makes sense for podcasting. And that's obviously what you guys are doing. And so yeah, I think it's easy for, you know, you mentioned Libsyn, for them to kind of say, well, like we're chugging along and we get people from switching from Libsyn or Anchor all the time.
I'm hearing a lot about this, Dan, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, of course.
Is this a current trend or is it just because we happen to be in, kind of in the middle of things that we see it more? Because it just feels like I'm hearing more people say, oh, I'm just going to, you know, switch. Seems like people are pretty cavalier about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're right. And I think the driving factor for it is that once people start to realize that there are other things out there, they're ready to explore. They're ready to try things out and they're ready to experiment. And I think, you know, a company like a Libsyn, they don't have to do anything but what they're doing. They don't have to redesign their interface to look cool. They've got enough customers who are just there. They have their routine, they have their system, they check in, they upload, they're out. And my goal was always to try and provide more to make it easier for people to podcast. Like I'm trying to build a tool that you want to use, that is easy to use, that gets out of your way, but that there are tons and tons of features so that if you're a pro, you can come in and you're like, oh, cool. There's chapters right here. I don't need a separate app to embed chapters. Or there's this recording notes page so that while I'm recording, I can type little notes and hit enter and it remembers the time codes for me. Like all of this stuff is fun and cool that I figured out. The way you figured stuff out is like, I've been doing this for so long that I've run into these stupid things that irritate me. And I'm like, I'm just going to build a feature so I don't have to keep doing it. But like a Libsyn doesn't need to do that because people are just dropping their files off there. So for us, we're very much hungry. And I very much want to, when something new, like what you guys have come out with is here, I really want to support that. I really want to integrate it because I want to use it too, you know, like I want it. Yeah. So that's kind of my motivation.
Dan, go ahead, Dave.
Did Fireside develop out of 5x5? Is that how that works?
I was going to ask a very similar question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I had built when I first was starting 5x5, which was in 2008. I had been, you know, I had decided I wanted to try podcasting full time. And I was just, as I was coming up with new shows to do, it seemed like there was like a threshold for me that's like I could get X number of downloads and listeners for a specific show, but then I was kind of hitting like a glass ceiling of like, I can't seem to cross much past beyond this level. So I'll just do another show. I'll get it up to that level. And that's how I'll make enough money to pay my bills.
Yeah.
So I had a handful of shows and I found that every time I was doing a show, I had to go and make a new website for it. And I was updating a lot of them by hand. And at this time, again, 2008, 2009, there weren't, like there wasn't software out there. I think Libsyn existed, but I didn't like it. I mean, I'm sorry if the Libsyn guys are listening, nothing against them, but like the interface sucked and I'm a usability person. I've spent a lot of time doing design and development and software development like you, Dave. And it's like, I care about the experience. I want to enjoy the software that I'm using. Life's too short for crappy software. So I thought, you know, I'll reluctantly build my own system that'll let me anytime I want to make a new podcast or a show, it'll just be here. And I mean, I've been building software like publishing tools forever. So of course it made sense that I could just build it. So I built it and it ran 5x5 for a long time. And over the years of doing it, we had lots of different people on come and go on 5x5 and different hosts and different people. And they'd say, you know, I'd really like it if you had this feature that could work like this. And I'd say, okay. And someone else would say, oh, what if you could work like this? What if you had this? And say, all right. And I'd build it. And so at the end of all of that, long story short, I had a lot of really great input from really smart podcasters and my own experiences to draw from. It's a Fireside was a total ground up rewrite. It wasn't like I took what I built for 5x5 and made it into something I thought people would want to pay for. I completely started from scratch. But a lot of everything that I learned from 5x5 and building it went into Fireside. And I'm in the process now of finally moving everything from 5x5's ancient crappy CMS now by today's standards to the modern Fireside.
That's real similar to the way that the Buzzsprout guys told us that they kind of evolved. They started out with making CRM software that had nothing to do with even podcasting, but they just sort of grew their software in this direction over time. And then finally they're like, hey, we've actually got a really good base here.
It's really quite amazing how for such a mature industry, there's really only a handful of people that have created really good tools for the authoring. A lot of focus went into recording, editing, processing. And that's where I think a lot of people really, really were just heads down. And then because of this chicken and the egg decade of standstill of development, nothing, you know, there was really no incentive, I guess, for anyone to jump into the new market. And for me, when we started working on these tags and I said, hey, no, I'll just code it myself. And I looked at the notepad and I went, no, I won't. I can't do all these escape characters. And it's a lot more than it used to be back in the day. And I just went looking for a simple tool that would just create an RSS feed, just a file. And it's not out there. I mean, yeah, there's a few, but nothing you can extend and create new tags with. So it's really nice to see this. This really, as you said, rapid development. I haven't looked at the Fireside interface. What do you have for chapter creation? Because my big ask, I think, is, and we have one from Hypercatcher, is the ability for people to, you know, to create community based tags, which it would be great if it works amongst all different apps and everyone somehow pings the same thing, but I was just wondering what the current process is. Is it just very simple timeline, enter, title, URL, image URL?
Yeah, very, very basic. I don't even have the image URL part because I built it just kind of for myself. I wasn't doing a lot with chapters and people never really asked. Like I'd really, really try to pay attention to the Fireside customer base because those, they're just, we have the best, I'm so lucky. We just have the best customers, the best people, and they come up with so many ideas and so many of the features that I've implemented have come from people just like in with 5x5, just podcasters who are using it saying, I wish it was like this. I wish I could do this. Chapters was not a request. There are not, I am shocked still by how few people even use chapters. So the implementation that we've done is very, very basic. It's just you can enter in a chapter, you can enter in, you know, the time code, you can enter in a title. And I said, I'll do images when people ask for them, and no one has asked.
Right.
And, you know, we don't make a big stink about having chapters. It's on the, you know, on the podcast's episodes edit page, there's a tab that says chapters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can't be more prominent really than that, other than having like a big flashing arrow pointing at it. But not a lot of people use it. I'm shocked at how few people use chapters or care about chapters. And I wanted to ask you guys, like, is this something that's like big? Because your implementation of chapters and the way that, so for people who don't sit there and read the RSS feeds that are compliant with what you guys have built, there's a little link in there that says chapters. And if you follow that link, it's a JSON feed essentially for that episode's chapters. Perfect implementation, best way to do it. Are a lot of people using it? Is this something you guys think is important, or did this come from the community?
Chapters has been a big thing, I think, amongst a small group. Of course, a lot of people do spend time and put chapters into their MP3 file, which is kind of universally recognized by some of the bigger apps.
Right.
What got me excited are two things. One is community chapters, so other people tagging places in the show, so that it's exactly what it is, a community, and then you know other people can go and find those chapters. But what really got me excited was the image URL, because for me, and it works best right now in Podfriend, the web app, you're literally looking at the screen and we're talking about album art, and then it just pops up at that very moment. You see the album art that we're talking about. So to have that and to say, okay, here's a chart, or here's a graph, or here's a picture, and then to be able to say, just go ahead and take a look at your app screen. That is super, super cool to me. And there's only two apps that do it right now, which is Hypercatcher and Podfriend.
And Podcast Addict, I think, does
Podcast too. Addict does it as well?
I believe so, yeah.
I thought they... Do they have an image that rotates?
I know he implemented chapters.
No, he has chapters and he has the image, but I think he just displays it as a list.
Oh, okay.
At the bottom. Right. Yeah. No, it's this rotating kind of slideshow thing that got me pretty excited. And so really there's only two implementations and one that's, you know, the web version. It looks sexy. I really like it.
Yeah. The chapters that I'm looking here in the database and there are roughly 2,100 episodes in our index database that have a chapter file associated with them. And a lot of these, there's quite a few firesides in there. I'm looking at these URLs and there's quite a few fireside podcasts that are using them, but it seems like from what I've seen, there's this like divide or not divide. Maybe it's a spectrum. There's the spectrum where people, you know, you either love chapters or you don't care anything about them. And everybody is either on one side or the other. There's like, it's very few people floating in the middle.
Right.
And it's like some people are just diehard chapter people. And those are the people that were already doing chapters within the MP3 itself.
Embedded. And I mean, for the record, if you put your own chapters in with other software, like Fireside can import those, so you can click a little import button, or you can just not do anything and Fireside won't touch them and they still ship out with the chapters the same way that you did them.
Oh, so if you pull it's your not MP3 like it clobbers in. Them. Oh, you pull your MP3 in, it can suck them out. Is that what you're
Oh saying? Yeah, it'll import them if you want. That's or great. You can just or you just do nothing and they just ship out with your MP3 untouched.
It's right. Something about the chapter spec is okay, well, you know, why would you do a separate chapter spec versus, okay, it's already available in the MP3 itself? And one of the reasons that we felt it was necessary is for exactly the same thing that you're talking about. You as a hoster can implement chapters without having to do the heavy, like a bunch of heavy audio process. You know, you don't have to re-encode or parse the file and stick them in the frame headers and all this kind of stuff. I mean, like, it's just so much easier to keep everything in a separate JSON file. It's just an implementation.
Perfect. It's perfect. It's the way it should be.
You know what I would love? I just got to get it out. Cause I know Martin's listening, who develops Podfriend. I'd love a chapter Podfriend, that I could then share as a widget, one of your famous little widgets, like the Twitter widget. And when you play that piece, if there's a chapter that image shows and the link shows, I don't know why I want it, but I just want to say I wanted it. That would be so fucking cool. Like you could do just like little presentations, you know, it's like a little, oh, that's kind of cool. There's so, I don't know. It just feels to me like there's a market for that.
Oh, there is, Adam, you're right. But the thing is, just listening to what you were saying, how you like using chapters for popping up the image of the thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
There, I don't think people even realize that chapters can do that. No, I think the majority of podcasters out there think that it's just a way to like skip an ad or jump to the second half of the interview or something. They don't even realize that it could be like it could make the whole podcast experience more interactive. But when you're talking about community chapters, you mean somebody's listening to it and they could say, oh, right here, yeah, I want to put a essentially a marker down saying this is the funny thing that this person said.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so Hypercatcher allows you to do that, but it's only one app and it's on iOS. So, you know, before we get to, and you know, and you have to have a back end running. The app has to have some kind of back end to store those markers,
have those be submitted up. And then when I'm playing the MP3, it knows that I'm playing that MP3 and shows them in my player. Right.
Yeah.
And how do you stop abuse of that? Because eventually you get people who are going to abuse it.
Yeah. Approval process. So Hypercatcher will just show you the submitted chapters, and then you can approve or change or whatever you want before it goes through.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, you know, I'm looking like, all right, who's going to have a link to one of those Safari pages that hijacks your iPhone browser?
Right.
Where you have to restart, and you have to empty your history because your Safari won't start anymore.
Yeah, six chapters of porn links, you know, all that. You're a Ruby guy, Dan?
Yeah, primarily. I mean, Fireside's all Ruby on Rails with some other, there's some other tech in the background there, but primarily that's what I've been using just because I got onto Ruby on Rails right when it was brand new. More than 10 years ago, whenever it first came out. And I actually built, I think, one of the first, if not the first, like Ruby on Rails powered CMSs for an internet magazine. And it was a really fun community at the time. And it was really different. It was really fun. And Ruby's a fun language to code in. What are you guys developing in? I should know the answer to this.
Oh no, it's all over the map. PHP, JavaScript, mostly PHP for the back end of the API. And then the aggregator's all in Node.js.
Nice. So I mean, JavaScript is like, I don't even think to mention it because it's sort of a given. It's like you wouldn't say, well, I use a computer to write code. Like, of course you do. Yeah. I feel like that's JavaScript has just become ubiquitous. I don't know how it's possible to build an application of any kind for the web without it. But the Node.js stuff is really great. And I think Node, I mean, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I think Node is, you know, there are people who say, oh, don't build it in Node, build it in Go, build it in Rust or whatever. Yeah. But I still seem way more Node than any of the others.
I don't like JavaScript. And JavaScript. No one does. I know. It's crazy. JavaScript is the language that everybody uses and depends on, but everybody also hates with a passion.
Everyone hates it. Anyone who understands good code hates it.
And all the promises and all that kind of stuff, that's great, but it's still a dumpster fire. I mean,
it really is.
You can't get away from it.
No, thank you. I mean, I write JavaScript code half the time. I mean, I hate doing it. And like yesterday, my son, he was using, you know, he has Steam to play his games. And there's this thing where I guess I don't understand the details, but somehow you get like a game in your wish list that doesn't show up in your wish list anymore, but it's still there. So you get the wrong count. So like, it'll show you have 19 games in your wish list when you really only put 16 in there. The only way to clear it out, we search for it and it's some dude wrote JavaScript that you have to go into a web browser, log into Steam in a web browser, paste the JavaScript in your web browser's console, and it will find the unlisted ones. And he's like, is it safe for me to run this? And so last night I'm sitting there reading someone else's JavaScript code, but like, I didn't even realize I know, like, I don't think about JavaScript. I don't even think that I know it. I don't even consider it a thing. It's just like, of course,
I don't think anybody else. I don't think anybody does know it. I don't think anybody actually does know JavaScript. The only guy that knows JavaScript that actually knows it is that dude that wrote the book, like JavaScript, the good parts,
right?
Or whatever it's called. That's right. He's the only guy that really knows it.
Yeah.
Everybody else is just bullshitting.
Yep. No, 100%.
I was wondering what, you know, in the tradition of interviewing hosting companies, we typically
our long tradition of interviewing hosting companies.
Yeah. we have. I'm trying to figure out what Bitcoin related shenanigans that we can ask Dan about to totally confuse him.
Yeah, now we got to tell you something you'll never understand, and then kick you out.
Yeah, good interview.
Have you played with any of the value block stuff, Dan? Have you looked at Sphinx Chat or any of that stuff?
Yeah, only because of you guys, only because what you've been talking about and this show, and it was completely off my radar. We haven't implemented any of it yet, but it's definitely on my radar now because of you guys. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that, like, it's so not main. I mean, like, it's you guys think about it so much that I feel like to you, it's like, well, of course, this is important. But then there's like this huge pocket of people that don't know anything about any of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, no, that's.
And they don't want to be educated and they don't want to learn about it. They're like, nope, this is not how I want to do anything. It's like the old way, you know?
Well, the good news is once we get a couple of shows really up and running and talking about it and there's apps to get, I mean, the main drawback to Sphinx, it's fantastic because it's two-way interactive. They got a lot of stuff that goes way above and beyond any podcast app, certainly on community features, which is truly, truly dynamite. It doesn't scale in a quick manner the way we kind of need to launch the whole idea, where you just have a podcast app or a couple of apps that anybody can use. Anybody, as long as you can figure out how to. In fact, I think what Breeze will do is, you know, they tie in a fiat payment processor, and you can load it right up with dollars, and then boom, you've got Lightning Bitcoin, and you're off to the races. And of course, the app will work even if you don't have that, and that'll scale. So then podcasters can say, "Hey, check it out." And the way I've always seen these things roll out, then you have hundreds or thousands of people who are checking it out and they listen to other podcasts. And if they like it, they'll tell the other podcaster they listen to, hey, you should implement this. And then the podcaster has to go figure out how to do it, what it is. It kind of markets itself. And I have noticed that when there's money involved, people do pay a little more attention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So,
and speaking of money, I mean, the things that we're always hearing about, tons and tons of people asking us this all the time. They want dynamic ad insertion. That's the biggest, that's the number one request that I get these days, because maybe it's because we've added all the other features that people are asking for, except that one. And then the other thing that's talked about a lot is stats and accurate stats. And,
yeah, sure.
You know, in order to get the kinds of stats that people want, like the kind, and they always compare it to YouTube. And I have a lot of conversations with people who are coming from YouTube into podcasting. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I hear over and over again, you know, YouTube gives you really great stats, but not just stats. It shows you what your viewers are actually doing.
Right.
And I'm sure you guys have heard this too, but it's the, you know, the fact that, like, let's say you have an intro segment on your YouTube video that you do every time you make a video, and people are all, you can see if people are watching it or skipping over it. Exactly.
Well, here's a great benefit of the value block and the Lightning Node payments is that what that creates is a transaction record that both the podcaster, of course, has over the person who's paying has, but the podcaster gets a per minute micropayment, which you can track beautifully over time. So you can, and that's actual listening behavior, because the minutes are, now if they don't have anything in their wallet, you're not going to get any payments, so you can't track it. But already the Sphinx app, and now they have a little extra thing, which is also kind of a YouTube thing or an Instagram Live, is you can hit the boost button. So if you're listening and you're like, oh, this is funny, you hit the boost button, it sends, you know, and it's configurable. I think the default is 10 sats, but most people have it higher. And boom, you send 100 sats to the show or to whatever split is in that value block. Then you can go back and as the podcaster, you can look at the timeline and you can see where the boosts were. So now all of a sudden you have some real granular data of, oh, people right. really like this because they were boosting it. And that, by the way, will carry over into any app that that implements this. They can do something very similar. So you have very similar to the Apple Podcast Connect. You have mm-hmm. listening statistics.
That's wonderful. I mean, and the more we can get that,
so you can even say, hey, not only do you get micropayments, but you also get some statistics. Because all you need mm-hmm. is a sample, right? You need a sample mm-hmm. of people who are going to listen, and then you have a kind of an idea. You could even overlay that with your Apple listen stats and extrapolate some good data.
But see, we don't even have an accurate. I mean, I know the IAB has their spec, which I don't. I mean, it's good, and it's good that we have a spec, but there are some flaws with it. I came out with a way in my mind. I've not told anyone about it. It's just it'd been sitting in my mind of a way that we could actually get just regular stats. I'm not even talking about listener behavior, but just accurate downloads.
Mm-hmm. And really? Come on, that's not possible, Dan. No one's been able to do accurate downloads. Get out of town.
In order to do it, we would need participation from basically every podcast app, and we'll never get that. We'll never get it. Yeah. And, you know, but there are ways to do it. We would just need everyone to get on board with it. And that would probably be about as easy as getting all the cell phone carriers to agree on a standard, across international borders. Yeah. So, the answer is probably never, but it's just super frustrating because for a podcaster, you know, it's not like they're saying, gosh, we really wish we knew if people were skipping through this part of the show. Maybe sort of they can kind of get that the way you're describing. They don't even know if their episode has ever been played when it's been downloaded or how many people actually really even downloaded the thing. And it's super frustrating. Yeah. The funny thing is it's always the people that when we get asked questions about it, it's always the people with really, really small shows, relatively speaking. The people who have hundreds of thousands of downloads, they don't really care. They don't even care at that point. But it's the people who are like, last week I got 51 downloads and this week I got 48. And
that's what I like so much about the streaming value is, even though so I'm just looking at the index node and in the month of November, and this is a very, very, very small group. What do you think, Dave? 20, 30 people maybe are listening?
Yeah, I think it's more than we think it is, but it's maybe max 50.
Yeah. So, by the way, that those 50 people and their boosting and everything they've done have resulted in $15 to the index. I'm looking at that and going, shit, that's 1% of whatever else is flowing. You know, that's some real money that's flowing around amongst a small group of micropayments.
Right.
But the money doesn't even matter. You just like click, click every minute. There's something coming in. And it's like, oh, my God, someone's listening right now. They're listening right now. Yeah. And then you see like a 3 Satoshi come through again. The index is 1%. Like, someone boosted. You know, it's just like so you get a pretty good idea. Now, the reporting I have, I have no idea what anyone's playing, but as a podcaster, and that's what I like about the splits, is that everybody involved gets the same reporting. So whether you are, or at least has the same data, whether you're just whether you get 5% of a particular episode because you did the artwork, it's still... You get to see exactly where people were listening as well, or where they liked something more or less. And in fact, when you're talking about the artwork, you can probably see if people like that artwork, if they're boosting. I mean, it's endless. And it's so simple to implement. I mean, more or less.
Well, now, how would you characterize your customer base? Would you say that like 50, how much of a percentage of them are really in it for monetization purposes and how much are really just kind of don't care? They're just into it for just the fun and the experience of podcasting.
That is a wonderful question. I don't know if I have a definitive answer on that because you know, there are so many different ways to monetize. We have a little feature that makes it easy for you to enter in like sponsors and links for sponsors, but it doesn't have any kind of, there's no like payment system. If you're a sponsor, you don't log in and like have a way to use a credit card to buy a sponsorship in there. We have left that up to the individuals to do it. But what we are rolling out is integration with Patreon and integration with, we've actually had integration with Patreon for a while.
Is that for feeds behind an extra level?
Yeah. And it's actually the way that, and we're adding in Memberful support too, but the way that this works is like, for example, I have a show that I do called Roadwork. I do it with John Roderick out of Seattle. And we also do a bonus show every week. And we make a version of the episode with no sponsors in it available. So depending on your Patreon tier, right, you either get, well, everyone who supports us gets the bonus show. And then different tiers, depending on what tier you are, you might get the sponsorless version of the show. So I'll use this show as an example. What I have to do, my workflow for this is, okay, take the show, clean it up, make it sound good, and then publish it without the sponsors. Then publish another version of that same episode with the sponsors. Then take the after show and publish that version. And when I say publish, what that means is I take the regular sponsored version and push it up to the 5x5 CMS. Then I have to go log into Patreon and I have to upload the content for the bonus show, and I've got to upload the content for the other show, and I've got to set
I'm telling
the
tiers. You, Bitcoin Lightning is easier.
I believe you. But so many people are already on Patreon, and we already have all the people on Patreon. So the way we implemented it in Fireside is you would just upload it to Fireside. You would upload the episodes to Fireside, and then you would select who in the Patreon, whether everyone gets it, or you would select the one tier that, and above that is allowed to get it. And then each person gets their own private feed from Fireside that only they have access to. It's a unique feed. It's not guessable. And you have the ability as a podcaster to expire feeds or regenerate them or whatever. So if you detect some abuse, but the problem again with having those things exist on Patreon, I don't know how many people are downloading them from Patreon. Patreon has zero stats. I don't know if they're fast or slow downloads. People don't even know where to go on Patreon to find the feed that they're supposed to use to subscribe to. So Fireside takes all of this away and makes it all easy, and it'll integrate with Memberful and stuff like that. But the problem is we don't have any kind of like official partnership with Patreon. And if Patreon decided today to turn off their API, which they might do, we're screwed. Our customers who are using it also get screwed. And they just announced a partnership with another podcast company who's doing the same thing, which I suspected and talked about on a couple shows, because they basically came out with an announcement back in January saying, our API is fine and we're not going to be updating it anymore. And also we're not really going to support it anymore, which to
and
me,
by the way, here's our new partnership over here.
Yeah, exactly. So we implemented it anyway, but the more ways that I can give customers or podcasters to get financial support, back to your original question, the more I want to do that, because I really think that what you guys are onto, that's really the future of podcasting, is people saying, I like this, I want to support it. It's not listening to ads. Yeah. There'll always be like big shows with big ads. I think that's sure. Solidified forever. But I really, if it's me, I love supporting people and knowing that like they're getting, you've talked about this so much, Adam, I feel like I can't add anything to it, but you know, you're supporting the person directly and that feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, that's the model. And,
well, over the last few weeks, since I've been using the Sphinx app, but of course, the first people that jumped on board were all the Bitcoin podcast guys,
right?
And so they already understood all this stuff, so they all jumped in there. So it's mostly that, and there's no agenda in there, and podcasting 2.0. And so I've been using that to listen to any of the feeds. I was using Overcast, so any of the feeds that now are Lightning enabled, I've pulled them, removed them from my Overcast, and I'm just listening to them on Sphinx. And I can tell you, one of the things psychologically is I seriously feel guilty not paying for a podcast.
Yes.
I do. Works. I mean, I was thinking about that a couple of days ago because I couldn't, there was a problem with the Sphinx app and I ended up having to reinstall it in order to get it to work. But in the meantime, I wanted to listen to Tales from the Crypt. And so I was trying to, so I flipped back over to Overcast and it just made like,
felt bad.
Yes. I had like a physical feeling in me that I was doing something wrong by not listening in a way that was going to pay them.
Powerful mojo, man. I like that.
I was like, you know what? This is a very interesting concept because this is what's actually, how am I going to say this? That's a good thing. Cause yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about, the concept of free needs to die. Because there's no, and I want to say this about Fireside. As I was looking through, looking on the page, I like, it's just, here's what you get. You pay, this is how much it's going to cost you per month. And there's no free, tier where you're going to have ads and we're going to try to monetize you in some other way. It's just straight up price.
Well, I mean, I don't like doing that. I don't like that. So why would I build that into my service? You know, if I don't like I debated a long time and I had a lot of people saying, oh, you've got to have a free tier. You've got to have a free tier. And I really have been resistant to that. The way that we're trying to get around that now is we're at, and this isn't, I hope Garrett, my developer that works with me, who's been working on this feature, won't get pissed off if I talk about it, but he's been working really hard on basically trials that you don't need a credit card for. So you can basically just, you know, make a username and password and you get in and you're able to use all the features of Fireside short of like basically taking the show live. Everything short of that, you'll be able to use it, experiment with it, because for whatever reason, even though we've got a 14-day free trial, you still got to put a credit card in.
Yeah.
And there's you would be shocked at how many I am shocked. And how many people get to that point and are like, nope, screw it, I'm out, I'm not doing it. I'm not giving them my credit card. Like, we're going to do something. First of all, like, Stripe handles it anyway. But it, like, what are we, like, you really are afraid that we're just going to start charging you if you, you know, like, if you cancel in the 14 days. Do you know how many people over the lifespan, I guess we started in 2016, the lifespan of Fireside, how many people have gone like past their trial and had to write in and say, oh, I went past my trial and we refund them? Like a dozen, like so few. People are pretty good about it. So I don't know why that's such a hang up for people, but fine. If we can make it easier, then, you know, we'll let people log in and do whatever they want
to
do.
When I wanted to try out Buzzsprout, and I believe they do have exactly that, where you can set it all up without a credit card. But you can't publish. And and it took me past the hump. I'm like, oh shit, I'll sign up for this. Of course, they immediately refunded my money and gave me a free account, but that's silly. But I kind of like that idea. So you find that works? Do you get a percentage of people who try it out and then convert? Is that better for you?
Most of the people who do try it out do wind up, using it and becoming a customer, which is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like any kind of barrier that I can help remove for people to get in, not just into Fireside, but into podcasting in general, because gosh, compare where we are now in 2020 with where we were 5 years ago. Like, it is a completely different universe and it's so easy to get started now. You can buy like this microphone that I'm using, my little home microphone. It's, you know, what is it, $100 or something? Like, that's not a huge investment in. How much did the guy who likes to go fly fishing invest in his fly fishing hobby? Hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to get all the right equipment and the gear and learning how to cast the line and learning it. You know, like, that's an expensive hobby that I just picked. But even a bowling ball, if people even go bowling anymore, a bowling ball costs more than that. Shoes cost more than that. So now with podcasting, it's so easy to get interested in it. It should be easy for people to do it. But back to your comment about free, I just don't believe free makes sense. There's always a catch. There's always a catch.
Well, free is expensive at the end of the day. So Web 3.0, which I have a feeling will run on some form of blockchain type infrastructure, maybe quicker than we realize. I had a pretty good experience today. I was trying to find some documentation on a specific Lightning node function, And I came across this site, which is really nice, really well laid out. You know, it's like someone took the GitHub pages and then made the documentation easy to understand, color coded it. And I was like, oh, this is exactly the info I wanted. And it said, pay 150 Satoshis or, you know, was it 3 cents to continue? And I'm like, oh, hold on a second. And you click on the button, up pops a QR code. I scan it with my phone. I hit yes. Boom, the page loads. That was a good experience, and I felt pretty good as well because I saw most of the page. I needed the information I didn't have yet. I knew it was obfuscated by this paywall, but it was so fast and so easy for me to just, you know, pick a random wallet, scan the QR code, done. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, right. The paywall process is difficult to get to overcome just in and of itself. It's really not about, it's not so much about paying as it is like this conjunction between who you're paying and how the process is going to work. Because if I'm clicking over to Vanity Fair to read an article and it pops up a paywall, I'm like, you know, I mean,
yeah, I don't even know who this is. Who gives a shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, but if I click over to Substack or somebody there who I know is like an independent person who's going to charge me $5 a month. I'm willing to sort of jump over the fence there and go through the process of doing a Stripe payment and all that kind of thing, because I'm like, well, this guy's going to get all the money. I mean, he's going to get most of this, you know, he's going to get a lion's share of this.
I wonder what the Substack fees are. I don't actually know what they're charging. I should look into that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're doing Patreon level.
Yeah. I'm sure it's gotta be small, because otherwise you couldn't really make a $5 a month thing work.
Yeah, but if they take 10%,
that's true. Yeah, I don't know what that is. There's some sort of conjunction between who it is and the process that it's going to take.
Right. Right. Yeah, I agree. And you feel when you're, even if you have your credit card details preloaded in your browser, autofill, whatever, it's still. And by the way, if I'm doing that for 3 cents, I'm not doing it. And nor is the credit card company. They're not going to do it either. They're like, no, you got to have at least a dollar or whatever. I'm sure there's some limit because the fee charges down the line are higher for them. I just think that ease, once you make it that easy, and I know guaranteed 3 cents is going to go from me to somewhere. I don't give a crap. I know the guy's going to get it. He's going to get it directly. It's not going to get subverted somewhere else. And it was easy to do.
You don't have to set up an account and go through.
Account. You know. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Dan, are y'all, you mentioned dynamic ad insertion. Are y'all doing any sort of ad insertion tech?
I mean, that we're working on that hard. I don't like dynamic ad insertion. And there's two different, when people say dynamic ad insertion, there's kind of two different takes on it. One kind of building on the second one. The first one is, I have a podcast. There are certain areas of the podcast, time codes of the podcast that I've designated as
ready for an ad. Yeah, this is a problem.
And tell me what you're thinking, Adam, because I want to.
No, I don't want to interrupt. Keep going. I'll tell you about the time code problem.
Okay. So then you insert your ad into that programmatically. So you might say, well, I've got my back catalog. I've got 100 episodes and I want to sell them for $1,000 a month. And, you know, some mattress company wants to pay me to put their ad. So I'll go do the ad read for the mattress company and talk about how awesome the mattress is. And then the system will use these time codes that I've already entered in and drop this ad into the pre-existing back catalog of shows, or maybe even in the new set of episodes that are coming out, it'll automatically put them in. And then now I can monetize that. And then next month I'm going to get $1,000 from some other company and it's going to go back and replace that in all of those episodes again. It's going to take the mattress ad out and put in the ad for the web hosting company. Right. And then there's also the concept of dynamic ad insertion, where it goes a step further than that and actually serves different ads to different people based on their demographic or geolocation. Yeah. Right. So that the person who's in, Alabama is going to hear an ad for their local company or some kind of regional promotion.
Go ahead. Pickup trucks. You can say it.
Yeah.
We know where Dave's from.
And hey, then, you know,
from Austin.
Okay. That's right. That's right.
We got Beamers. We got ads for Beamers in Austin.
Plus your Teslas.
Yeah. Teslas, right.
The Tesla. Yeah. Tesla. That's it.
Exactly.
And then, you know, the person in California is going to get an ad for a Prius. So basically that's the concept. And we're not doing the second one at this point. We're looking at doing the first one, which would make it easy for people to put an ad into their pre-existing or new episode. They put in a time code that says, here's where the ad should go. And then our software adds it. But I've seen so many different implementations of this, and my take on dynamic ads are just, you know, unlike Adam, we have done lots and lots of ads over the years in my shows. And, you know, I always look at No Agenda and I'm like, I should have done it that way.
It's not too late, man.
No. And it's not too late unless, like, you depend on the ads that you have for the, yeah, you know, the income that you need. But I would love to do stuff that's just fully listener supported. And most of the stuff that I'm doing now, any new stuff that I work on, I'm trying to make listener supported because it's better. But, you know, it's frustrating because only bigger shows can get ads. And so you have people who don't have a lot of downloads. And I've heard this argument made by a lot of Fireside customers for why they want it. I've told them, like, you know, dynamically inserted ads, they don't really work. They don't really perform that well. And in my opinion, in many cases, they detract from the quality of the show. They interrupt the show. It sounds different. It doesn't sound genuine, even if it's host read. And they don't, from what we've always heard from all of the sponsors that I've worked with for, you know, since 2006, is that they don't work well either. Mm. And they cheapen, they cheapen the podcasts. And so but the people let me just finish this point. The people who've insisted that they want them have said, oh, well, I might make $25 a month doing this. And I said, yeah, but like, you're screwing up your podcast. Like, right. But that's $25 a month. I could save up and get a new microphone or something. Like, well, I guess that's a point. Right. But,
well, I brought
clips. I don't love that.
I brought clips. So, Adam, play. If you want to hear some dynamic ad insertion, play clip one. This is from a Spotify original. What is the name of this show? Let's see.
Mama Knows Best.
Mama Knows Best. That's it.
Thank you guys for all the support with the podcast, and I'm super excited to see how you guys like the new updates. So I love you all so much, and let's get into it.
Okay, stop. Stop it. You're about to hear this. This is a Spotify exclusive, and so this, you know, Spotify's got the full stack.
Right.
They're, you know, humongous mega company. they can laser focus their dynamic ad insertion
with surgical precision. Yes.
Surgical precision. All right, go.
And let's get into it. So
before this episode, a quick question. How do you spend and earn?
Okay. So it cuts her off in the middle of a word. It's like, so boom, ad.
Yeah. The ad came 2 seconds too late.
Yeah, I mean, if Spotify is their whole deal.
Mm.
And I mean, is top to bottom, we got the full stack, man, laser precision, surgical. We can stick it
horrible.
Ad in there.
It's just horrible.
And it cuts it off mid word. I mean, if they can't even do it right, well, I mean, what? I mean, it's just not, it's not doable.
You wonder, is that because the host of the show or the producer of the show put the time code in wrong by a second or half second, or because the person recording it didn't leave enough of a gap? And the other thing is, what if you don't have any spot at all? How do you intro it? Do you say, oh, we want to thank our sponsor?
House ad.
And then you're back. Like, you know, like there's so much that has not been really identified or explored.
We, at Podshow, we were doing this 12 years ago. I know we experimented with ad insertion, but the thing that was the most exciting, which I'm going to give Spotify a free idea, we had the golden ticket blatantly stolen from Willy Wonka. And we had, I don't know, 20 different shows, and they were promoting that if you listened to their show, you had a chance of getting the golden ticket. And so we had, I think, 10 or 15 golden tickets for some prize. And we would literally insert that into just one or two, or those 15 individually served MP3s across these different shows at some random generator we had come up with. And someone would hear, "You won the golden ticket," right in the middle kind of the show. It more or less the spot. Well, this was all post-produced, so we knew exactly where to put the time code in. But it was, you know, for like one individual person. It was very cool at the time. But that was kind of for a gaming fun element. And now it's just become, it's almost as bad as early cable television. And it still happens today. You know, when your local cable station cuts to a break, but there's something messes up with the time code, and you see part of the national spot, and it cuts that off, and it comes back, and you get your car dealership. And these things, no one's really ever perfected it.
Yeah, it's all of this is very tough and very confusing. And, you know, the funny thing is that for so long, everyone said, wow, podcasting, it's so much better than radio. Yeah. And one of the big reasons that they always said it was better than radio is because it didn't have stupid, intrusive ads. And guess what we're getting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Dan, I can't tell you how to run your business, and I never would. But seems to me if you added a value block feature and sold little mini nodes to your customers for a couple extra bucks a month, that they could probably coerce their own audiences into pledging money to listen, and they would get to that $25 a month pretty quickly.
I think you're right.
You know, and you don't really have to learn how to pitch, other than, hey, pledge, right. and do it for all the podcasts you like.
I'm trying to decide which is worse, a dynamic ad insertion or a host read that is just like so obvious that the person has no idea what they're pitching. Those are sometimes painful to listen to.
Well, so bad.
As long as you can fast forward, and you get that outside of Spotify. In Spotify itself, you can't fast forward through the ads. So I love Megyn Kelly's podcast. I think she's a proto podcaster. You know, it helps if you're rich. Because, you know, podcasting is a vow of poverty. But when she goes into a host read, I'm like, fast forward, like, ugh. It's so demeaning to her, even. Like, you shouldn't be reading this, Megyn. This, ugh. It's icky. I don't like it.
What podcasts are you currently excited about or doing, Dan? Because I know you've always seemed to have, you know, a dozen irons in the fire. I remember... I think the podcast that I listened to, I think the first podcast I ever heard with you on it was Back to Work. So I'll give you the Back to Work podcast is the podcast that made me stop listening to podcasts at 1.5 speed.
Well done.
I was like, I would always set it to 1.5 speed with shortened silences, and listening, and when you start listening to Merlin Mann with that, it's like
good luck.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you know, it's like you're on crack or something. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm like, no, I can't do this. That got me out of that habit. But what podcast are you into right now?
Well, the references that Merlin drops require, you know, like he's so fast. And I don't understand how anyone could listen to that at anything but 1x speed. And then you always get the people who are commenting like, I heard you guys talking on one-time speed, and you both sound like you're drunk. I'm like, bum, really? What does the rest of the world sound like to you? How do you function in the real world with people talking at one speed? Like, it must be really painful for you.
I think it screws your brain up. I think you can't, like, after a while, I would notice that when I got home from work on a commute, and I got out of the car, I went in to start talking to my wife. I'm like, this, something doesn't feel right.
Yeah. You were like, hurry up, honey, hurry up. Get to the point. What do you want to say? Yeah. What's going on here? Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
It's like you've lived in an episode of Gilmore Girls for the last hour and a half. And now nobody talk. The witty banter is not fast enough.
That's exactly what it is. Yes.
Right. Right.
Well, I have a very clear stance on this fast listening. I believe I deliver a piece of art with every show, and I question if you jog past the Mona Lisa, damn it. I think you should be listening to my art in regular speed, the way I intended it.
I don't know why people are in such a hurry. That, you know, the response that I got when I used to really chastise people about this, and eventually just gave up, but I used to get like all bent out of shape about it, was, you know, people would say, well, if I can't listen it two times, then I won't be listening at all because I don't have enough time in the day. I'm like, really? Really? Like, yeah. Do you fast forward? Do you watch your shows on fast forward? And then, well, if I could, I would.
Yeah. Well, I agree with Dave on this. I think it messes people's brains up. They get antsy. It probably goes well with the Adderall generation. Yeah. But I think it may have some longer term cognitive effects. On how you interpret things. I don't know. I mean, you know, if you put on glasses that invert everything within a day or two, you see in normal.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I've heard the same thing and it freaks me out a little bit.
I'm wearing them right now. What are you talking about?
Are you really? So, Dave, you're asking which shows I do or what I listen to?
No, what do you do? Which shows are you excited about doing right now?
So the ones that I've been doing back to work, like you mentioned, with Merlin Mann since January of 2011, I think. And we're still having fun with it. I still love talking to Merlin every week, and so I'm always still happy to do that one. I do a show with John Roderick, like I mentioned before, called Roadwork, which we started doing off the top of my head. I'm going to say back in maybe August of 2015, I think sounds right. So we've been doing that show for a long time. I do a show called Quit, where I help people who write in or sometimes call in. They figure out what they're doing with mainly their business, their career, that kind of thing. And that's a show that I've always had a lot of fun with. And I love the letters that I get and the questions that people ask. That's just, it's so much fun. And then there's two other shows that I'm coming out with. One of them is, there is sort of a running joke on a couple of my other shows that we would always get feedback from people saying how they listen to us or me and it puts them to sleep. They listen at night when they're falling asleep. And I said, well, then I'll just do a show designed to do that.
There
so
you go.
I'm going into the, cause you've got to use public domain books. So I'm going to be reading public domain books. Like the first one that I let people vote. Nice. And they picked War of the Worlds.
Oh,
so I'm going to be reading War of the Worlds to people to help them chill out. And so that show is called The Evening Read. And then after War of the Worlds, they'll pick the next book and I'll just read them and they can listen to them and enjoy them.
See, that is the
perfect, that's a great idea.
That's the perfect idea for the value block because they fall asleep and it stays running and you keep getting paid.
That's all I get paid literally while they sleep instead of while I sleep.
Yeah, it's genius.
And then the other show is a show that I've been wanting to do for a very, very, very long time. That is, you know, I just want to do it the right way. So I've been really procrastinating and I know I'm overthinking it now, but I want to do a show where I explore different kinds of, alternate reality kind of things, whether it's UFOs or alien abduction or simulation theory or
Dan's always trying to suck me into doing a show with him. Yeah, yes. He's trying to suck me in once again. No, Dan, you lost your shot, man. You lost
it. No, I did. I know. Back this was 10 years ago that I lost my chance.
No, you didn't lose anything, my brother. You didn't lose anything.
No. Prove me wrong then and come do a show with me.
Oh God. You know,
started like 20 different shows since I've been talking about it. I feel left out over here and we're in Austin together. We're Austin brothers.
I know. Well, I'm producing 5 shows a week now.
How much worse would it be to do one more?
There's not much difference between 5 and 6.
I thought five was the max. That's what I always learned. All right.
But I only listen, Dave, I only listen to one podcast. Well, two now, and that's No Agenda and this show. Yeah, I don't listen to any other one.
Shit. Nice.
You know what I love about podcasting 2.0 is since it never got, well, it got rejected for image reasons at the Apple index. So I never resubmitted it. So now whenever I'm trying a podcast, I know real quick if they're tied into podcastindex.org or not. It's like, oh, okay. You're not tied in. It's my secret weapon.
I can't find
Apple rejected the show?
It was a artwork was something wrong, size or God knows what it was. And
they want, I think they want 3000 by 3000 pixel.
Yeah. I think I gave them 2000 by 2000 and then it got rejected. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to leave it. Let's just not register it. And it's become a really handy tool. You know, it's like, let me see, because these guys say they're not integrated with our index. Hold on a second. Otherwise you'd find this show. So I kind of like that.
That's a good topic because we, you know, part of the idea of starting the index was living outside the Apple ecosystem so that we have an independent index of podcasts that don't require Apple to be the sort of center of the universe. And because it doesn't make sense for basically the largest corporate entity in the world to be also the default yellow pages for what is supposed to be an open standards ecosystem.
Right.
And so we do a lot of things. If you look at our, you know, how many total feeds we have, it's lower than some other, you know, we've got roughly 1.3 something million feeds and others.
Yeah, but it's like 3 hours old, guys. Like, what do you expect? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you barely launched this thing. It's just give it time.
We have gotten pretty far.
It's crazy how many you've got. In the time that you've been out, it's crazy how many you've got.
Well, I appreciate Fireside. I appreciate you because, like, I mean, y'all started auto-submitting your new feeds to us. I mean, God.
Early.
It was like within a week. Of when we quote unquote launched, it was the squishiest launch ever.
it wasn't a launch. It's more like we leaked under the door. It just leaked. Seeped out.
It was a leak.
Like a blob.
It's like, but I mean, it was within seriously like a week, that Fireside was like, yeah, we're good. We're on board. I was like, wow, that's fantastic. I think y'all were the first one to start auto submitting to us. And, man, I really appreciate that. Cause it's so not, you really, because I don't want to be scraping to try to get data. I don't want to scrape Apple to try to find new feeds on a constant basis. I just feel like that's ideologically opposed to the thing we're trying to do, which is not depend on them. So like the only way to really make that happen is to have independent streams of data coming in that are handing you new feeds, and we get large dumps, CSVs, people sending to us.
That's the part I really have enjoyed is there's definitely data guys out in the universe who have been collecting feeds and categorizing them carefully, you know, Polish radio stations, all kinds of interesting collections. And they show up, it's like, oh, here you go. I got 5,000 feeds that you've never heard of before. That's really cool.
It's been great. Cool. And then the hosters auto submitting, like you guys. I mean, if everybody auto submitted, because what we do is we also expose an endpoint where every new feed that we get, we also publish right back. So you can follow it. So it's kind of a clearinghouse model. And if everybody auto submits their new feeds to us, then we can just hand them right back out. And that can help other indexes to be created.
Absolutely.
And then we can, we can have redundancy and.
Don't we have at least one index taking that endpoint?
I think Podverse take it.
Maybe Podverse. I can't remember. Someone is.
Somebody
doing
does
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's really nice to see, everybody feeding to us, because even though we may not have everything, you know, we're building slowly, and then, you know, what we'll have at the end of the day is a decentralized index where everybody can participate, and you don't have to depend on, you know, what would be great is one day, you know, Apple participates as just another peer.
That'd be amazing.
And that way you wouldn't have to depend on, you know, well, Apple rejected my feed, and, you know, now I got to do all this other stuff and resubmit and wait 5 days to see if it gets okay and all this kind of jazz. You know, you just crank up your feed at the host at Fireside or wherever, and it just replicates through all the indexes, you know, in one shot.
You hear that, Apple? You hear that? Take that endpoint.
I love. I love what you guys are doing, and it's great to be, because it feels very cutting edge. It feels like the first thing that I've seen anybody do in this space in a long time, or maybe at all, to really start to try to move things forward. And you guys are doing it not as a company like Apple or Spotify, who's doing it for monetization. You're doing it for the community. You're doing it for the industry. You're doing it for the podcasters, and that anything that, like, we can do to support that is, like, I don't see it as optional, although it's fun to do and I like it and I'm happy to, when I'm doing it. It's, to me, it's like, yeah, of course you're going to do what you need to do to support this industry.
And we appreciate the support you've given, because just participating, hitting the API with whatever's appropriate, that's exactly what we need. And we really appreciate that. This is, of course, a value for value project. This is also a value for value podcast. Again, to show how well this idea works, if you say, hey, you listening or you using the index, the API, is this valuable to you? What is that value? Send it back to us. Now, of course, we have the beautiful red donate button on podcastindex.org. We also have a lightning invoice there, which from time to time someone shows up and does a subscription, which is really nice. We've had some really gracious people who have been helping us out, because, yeah, we did start it from the entire value for value perspective. If this is not valuable, it will dry up and blow away. But it's not. Yeah. And Dave, do you have a couple of people you need to thank who have sent in donations? If you don't mind, Dan, we're just going to.
No, of course.
We got a huge donation from an anonymous donor.
Yeah. I can tell Dan wants to be in a donation segment. I can hear it in his voice.
Yes, of course he does.
Absolutely.
He wants to participate. Yes.
Yes.
Let's see. We got quite a few here. See, Leslie Martin did a $2 a month subscription.
No.
And Dan, do you know Leslie?
Not that well.
Okay. All right. Leslie Martin says, I'm sorry.
Should I know Leslie?
I'm trying to, I'm like, why did you ask that, Dave? No. Like, what's going on?
Just wondering.
No, yeah. I don't.
I thought Leslie may be in the Austin Club.
You're just trying to draw Dan into our value for value segment, aren't you?
Yeah,
just, no right. matter what you do.
Yeah, see, if Dan.
Well, yeah, she and I saw the Guns N' Roses New Year's Eve concert together at Joe Robbins Stadium
at the Ritz.
In 1990.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Is that the one where Axl Rose was 2 hours late or 2.5 hours late?
You guys, this is like a morning zoo now, all of a sudden. Hey, everybody, yeah!
if Dan had a lightning node, we could put him in the block.
For this show, that's right. That's right.
I'll get a lightning node in a second.
Go to voltage.io. You can get a node.
You'd be getting paid right now.
Yes, as we speak.
Well, I'm going as fast as I can.
You'd be like, I could do another podcast. I would just sit back and watch the Satoshis roll in, baby. That's the choice you'll have to make, Dan.
And in a month, you would have $15, just like we did. So Leslie sent a note, and I don't know if Leslie, I'm looking for keywords in here where Leslie could say, to give me a clue as to whether Leslie is a boy or a girl. So it says first.
All right, because that could be either, couldn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. First, let me say that I'm not a developer. I don't work for a hosting company, and I'm not currently a podcaster. Oh, this doesn't help either. It says even my wife doesn't listen to me half the time.
These days, who knows? Doesn't mean shit.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
No. Why would I think anyone else would want to listen to me? That's funny. But I am a listener. Adam is always talking about paying what something is worth to you. My donation, a mere $2 a month. Don't call it mere.
No, that's your value, Leslie.
Yeah, that's not mere. Doesn't reflect what the podcast and the Index Project are to me, because I can't afford what I consider to be their value. It's merely what I can afford.
Yeah, but that's top value for you. So we really appreciate that.
Yep. Thank you, Leslie. Appreciate that. Everything. There is no limit for reading donations on this show.
No.
There's no bottom floor. Thank you, Leslie. We had one cancellation of an automatic subscription.
Ooh.
That hurts.
How much was it? How much did you guys lose?
$10.
That's an aggregator server. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, shut it down. Shut it down.
Matt, click, click, click. Man down. All right. And on that same note, thank you to our monthly donors, because a few more of those came in. I see them when they, when it auto pings or whatever. And I just want to make sure that you guys know we love you.
That is so fantastic, those recurrings. Because, we literally set up an extra server. It's like, okay, good. We know that's running. We appreciate it.
Yeah, this is bare bones here. Let's see. This says in humongous letters, I don't know why this printed so big. It says, I wish to remain anonymous. Gave a fiver to Pocket Casts in order to promote Podcast 2.0 features. Left me feeling that you deserve more. Thank you for your courage. And that is a $55 one-time donation.
Well, thank you. So trying to get Pocket Casts on board. Good. That's the work we need. That's appreciated. Thank you.
Yep. And our final donation is Wes Young. Gave us $25, and his message is keep on rocking. So
We will.
Thank you, Wes. We will. Your $25 enables us to rock harder than you did before you gave it to us.
How hard are you rocking right now, Dave? Just want to make sure. Are you on high on the rockometer?
Oh yeah. It's a mosh pit over here. That's it. So that's our donors for this week.
Yeah, we appreciate everyone supporting the project. Again, if you want to support us, if you get any value out of the podcast or out of the index itself, if you're using one of the apps, of course, we really want you to prepare for Lightning and for Podcasting 2.0. But right now, anything you can spare, anything you think is equal to the value you get out of this, just go to podcastindex.org. Big red donate button down at the bottom, and as well as a Lightning invoice. And on many apps, you should just be able to hit the donate button.
I want a donut button.
The donut button.
I like that right now.
From now on, it's called. We need a new tag. The donut tag. That works surprisingly well. I like that a lot. When I'm, if I use PodFriend as an example, and then it shows the donate button, and it takes you right to the correct page. That interaction turned out to work very well.
Y'all are doing the funding tag, right, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. We did all those first tags, so we've got all that in there. Yeah,
I like the funding tag. I know it was already being done with some other stuff with like Atom links and that kind of thing. But I like the funding tag just because I felt like it was worth sort of duplicating that functionality, because it's simple. Like, it simplifies everything from an aggregator standpoint. It's just like funding link done.
Right.
I want to throw something in sort of at the back end of the donation segment here. If you're, because people request read write API keys, on a regular basis, I'm not going to grant permission for a read write key unless we know who you are you need to join podcastindex.social and become like and speak. So we know who you are, because we don't want shenanigans. So for now, this will change. May change in the future, but we need to kind of know what you are, what you're trying to do. I mean, it's fine to do testing. I mean, you don't have to be like some kind of app. It's fine to just be playing around. But we do want you to kind of make yourself known and understand what you're going to do before you grant you a read write key and you start dumping a bunch, loads of garbage into the index.
Of that behavior, have we?
No, everybody's playing very nice.
Dan, is there anything you'd like to see us do? Anything we can implement, streamline, fix, make better? How can we help you?
Man, I love what you guys have been doing. Just keep it going. And there's nothing else that I feel right now you guys could really be doing better. I love the way that you have launched all this stuff, even though you were criticizing it. I think it's actually been really fun, and it feels like a movement to me. And I love what y'all are doing. I'm saying you're perfect. I wish I had something to say. I was thinking, oh, you need this, you need that. But really, I love what you're doing. And honestly, the input that you guys take from the community and the way that you're building these different things is so really thoughtful. And gosh, I really couldn't think of anything else to add. I like the direction that you're going in. If you do, the one thing I might think of is...
You softened the blow. That's yeah, what really. You did.
No, yeah, I just, yeah. As I'm talking, I'm
holding you're, you're sliding a pillow. You're sliding a pillow underneath.
Maybe, maybe you guys could keep going in this direction that you were talking about with chapters and help bring awareness to what else chapters can do. Because I really don't think that people understand the potential that's there for chapters. I think they yeah. think of it as like, well, this is segment one, this segment two, this segment three. But that almost to me is a way to get audience engagement, even if they're just looking. Because a lot of the time people, when they put a podcast on, it's playing in their house or they're doing while they're jogging or they're on the treadmill or they're doing dishes or they're walking the dog. So they're not even aware that these images are popping up on their on their thing. So I think there's an educational aspect to the podcaster and to the audience that there's more to it than that. But I just, anything that you guys can be thinking about for that kind of engagement, whether it's coming up with this, because I believe if you guys put out a really good standard that made it possible for podcast applications to record, not in a creepy way, it would have to be opt-in, but record what listeners are actually doing. Are they pausing? Are they playing? Are they finishing the whole episode? Are they skipping something? If there was a centralized reporting service that was open that mm-hmm. apps could tie into to do that if their users opted in, and that it could then, that could be reported back to the host, that would make all of my customers so happy. So that's, I don't know how that would work or what that would look like, but it would need to be a trusted third party to do it. It couldn't be that Overcast is collecting it and then doing something with it. It would have to be clean reporting it to a third party, and you guys should be the third party. So no big, but just make it happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Make it happen. I don't know if we want to be the third party.
I don't think you do, but I want you to be.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And by the way, for those of you listening right now, I want you to make sure you listen to this podcast at either Podfriend, go to web.podfriend.com, or get a hypercatcher, because at this very moment, if you look at your app screen, you will see a picture of Dan Benjamin right there. And look how good he looks. 136.54. Okay, I'm putting that in.
So we'll, I'm afraid we'll of prove, what this picture
we'll
is.
We'll prove. Okay. Oh, it'll be the goat, obviously. Well, the short answer to your listening statistics we've discussed, you know, that there is a way to do that, and it's completely trustless yet verified and accurate. And there's no third party.
Okay.
Everyone has their own data.
Well, yeah, that would work.
Dave? I was thinking, do you guys, this may be off topic, but does Fireside support WebSub?
Oh, that's a good question.
It would be very, very easy for me to roll that out. I've had a few requests for it. And actually I have a branch that has that working in it. Should we? Is it important? Is that something we should have?
I think so. I mean, we're.
When is this episode coming out?
Today in like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, well, it won't be done by the time that the episode comes out, but give me till the beginning. Well, I got to go eat some lunch.
Yeah. WebSub is helps us a lot.
Does it? I'll implement that. I'll have it beginning of next week for you.
I love that. That's nice. What I love about Dan.
Nice.
Next week, no problem. We'll take care of it for you.
Yeah, that's great. Well, like, because I'm going to do it.
Do you want me to say it should submit to that Google, the Google one, right?
Sure. Yeah, you can start there. They're not super. I've got.
Well, tell me which one you use. I don't care.
No. It's that one's fine. That one's fine. I think it's. It may be the only one that's free, but what I was thinking of is the one, you know, I wonder if you could do it just in house. Is that
just run my own one? Yeah, sure. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't know what's out there, but
is that what you want me to do? Cause I'll do that for you.
Cause here's the problem. I think, based on what I have seen, that the app, was it PubSubHubSpot.com, which is the worst domain name in the history of domain name. So I think that Google, that's Google's public one. I think, I don't know if it's overloaded or what, but
It's missing stuff.
Yeah. It is missing pings, and it's not reliable. I think it's about 75%, which is enough to kind of be a problem. And we've thought about being an open hub as well.
Mm.
Now I don't know if we can, you know, like the volume obviously becomes a problem when you're talking about trying to be in anytime you do something free.
Oh yeah,
you're gonna get hammered. But I was thinking, you know, if the hosts ran their own, you know, y'all could handle the traffic because the traffic for each one is not super high.
Mm-hmm.
And it may make things much more reliable. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
I like that idea. I think there's something there.
I will look into that
for sure.
Okay.
All right, Dan Benjamin. Running Great. Fireside in Austin, Texas. 5x5. What else? Anything else we need to promote for you?
Man, you've promoted so much for me already. I couldn't ask for anything else. Fireside.fm is the thing we've been talking about this whole time, and it shows at 5x5.tv. And gosh, that's it, guys. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
The new Area 57 podcast with Dan Benjamin and Adam Curry.
everybody. Yes.
Launching next week.
All right, guys. Thank you both very much. It was a great way to kick off the weekend. Perfect Friday. And we'll see you all over there at the Index.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. That's it. As we crank it down, we'll be back next week to bring another Friday board meeting of Podcasting 2.0.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.